Welcome, everybody, again. I'm Linda Pinnell, host of Healing the Heart of the Earth and Her Children, Opening Hearts, Opening Minds, and Transforming the Planet. And I'm also the founder of Conscious Alliances, which is a center for the study and evolution of consciousness, nature's laws and spiritual laws, and energy healing. We create a bridge between ancient wisdom and modern technology and create infinite possibility for all things new, including a whole new earth. And I am thrilled to have as my guest tonight Tom Heck, who is a teamwork coach, author, inventor, entrepreneur, speaker, and banjo player, and his most important function, father and husband. He's a passionate teacher of team skills, out to change the world and have fun doing it. I love that. His expertise and passion is in teaching team and leadership skills through experiential activities. He created TeachMeTeamwork.com, which is a web-based training resource with over 31,000 members, I believe, in over 103 countries. His training is endorsed by professional trainers across the globe. He has authored multimedia training CDs, books, and e-books, including the most popular team building games e-book ever written, entitled Team Activities on a Shoestring. And that has been downloaded over 30,000 times by people in over 100 countries as well. Tom has invented and licensed over 20 team building games, which are sold worldwide and used by trainers, facilitators, coaches, and teachers everywhere. His newest project is the Emerging Leaders Coaching Program, which focuses on youth development and Generation Y, and we'll talk about that in a little while. Tom has a BS in education from Virginia Tech, and he graduated from Coach University, which is a three-year coach training program. He is a strong advocate of the coach approach to building and leading teams. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you, Linda. It's a delight to be here. And if there's people on the call who received the broadcast I sent out, it's a delight to have an opportunity to talk with someone who gets the spiritual aspect of this work that we do in teams. Mm-hmm. I think that anybody who's working in teams on some level gets that what they're really teaching is the truth that all master teachers have taught through the ages, which is the idea, the truth of oneness, that we are connected, we are one. And so I think that that's what I most enjoy doing at Teach Me Teamwork. However, oddly enough, I don't always get a chance to talk about it. So,
yeah, you know, it's really interesting because I heard you talk several years ago, and I get your newsletter, I read your stuff, but I just never really thought about the consciousness aspect of it. And when I started to develop this program, I thought, who reflects this aspect, this fun game, leadership ability? Because leaders are, and entrepreneurs, by the way, we are the people to step out there and to bring this out in just a really major way, this consciousness and connection and oneness. And I thought, and I just thought, well, you would be a terrific person. But then when I started to research you, I was like, oh, wow, how in alignment you are with everything I believe and everything I'm doing. So it's my honor to talk to you about that spirituality. Well, how about if we just explore that a little bit?
Okay, let's do that.
What is the relationship between teamwork and spirituality, and specifically teamwork with games and spirituality?
Well, in exploring the topic of spirituality, I think that a place to start, perhaps, is that through a game, I believe what I try to do with a group is to get them to the place of experiencing more from their heart than from their head. So, for example, I mean, if you can imagine being in a room with 10 people and saying, okay, I'd like you to turn to page 132 and read the scenario in there about a team going through some issue, and we're going to discuss it. Mm. And then Contrast that with, okay, let's everyone get out of your seat. I would like you to come over to this part of the room or leave this room. We're going to go to this other space over here. And you present the group with an exercise, an activity, a game. And depending on the group, I might not use the word game, because if people showed up in their business casual attire, I tend to use the word exercise or simulation. You know, with you, I would use the word game. For, you know, they're synonymous. However, isn't it funny that some people, if you say the word game, they're going to think, oh, this is, there's not much to learn through a game, but that's not the truth at all. So through the activity, we move from the head to the heart. At least that's the goal. And we are more in a place of being present than being someplace else. Because if you're, for example, being lifted through a small opening hanging from the ceiling, and you're 4 feet off the ground and your head is being passed through this small opening and to a group of other people, it's kind of hard to think about the messages that are on your BlackBerry, right?
Yeah.
But as you're reading the book, you know, the paragraphs about this, you know, the scenario on page 132, it's easier to start to think, oh, what time am I going to be picking up the kids today? Or, you know, that project that I have to, you know, make sure that it gets done by Thursday morning. So that's the idea behind a game, is to get us to that place where we're present, more heart-centered, and then ultimately, I mean, here's the real path, I think, through learning, is to feel it, is to feel teamwork rather than not so much to think it.
Absolutely.
So these are the pathway. I mean, it's no different than if we were to have a conversation this evening about meditation. You know, we can talk for an hour or days about meditation. And I think if you really want to get to the place where you understand meditation, well, we sit down and we do that thing, right? And and people might say, well, I'm unprepared. I've never done this before. I'm a little intimidated. Some people are frightened by it. There's an unknown. And so these are all the things that we face, right? Through the experience of it. It's, you know, I've heard Jack Canfield talk about it in terms of riding a bicycle, where if no one has ever ridden a bicycle, and usually if you get a few hundred people in a room, there's somebody who has never ridden a bicycle. And again, you can have Lance Armstrong stand up and say, okay, here's how you ride it. Here's the feeling that I get in riding it.
Yeah.
And all of that's going to be in their head until the moment that you say, and we have a bike outside for you, and we're going to get on that bike right now, and I'm going to be right next to you, and we're going to, you're in the next 30 minutes, you're going to learn how to ride that bike.
So that experience gets it into the body and brings you fully present with what you're doing. And I think full presence is actually awareness, and full presence is actually one definition of consciousness.
Absolutely. Well, it's, you see, here's the delightful piece in working with a team, is that there's the individual consciousness. So if you go to a meditation center or you're meditating in your house, there's what you experience, and then there's the having that being with a group of people that are meditating. There's a different experience, and then there's amplify that when you have a whole group of people participating in a team building game, exercise, activity, simulation. All of these words point to the same thing of getting up and having this emotion and being present together.
Yes.
And that is where, when we talk about raising consciousness worldwide, that that's where I think what we can do as teachers of team skills is enter into these opportunities to teach, knowing that this is an opportunity for us to raise a group consciousness, and group consciousness and leading to the consciousness of the planet. The whole, you know, my take on it is the 100th monkey principle.
Yeah, I was going to ask you actually about both of those things, because it is that 100th monkey effect. And when we come together as this group in this powerful place of collaboration instead of competition, we're just kind of merging our energies and our resources. What is the actual impact of that? What do you think is the next big, if we can actually do that, this 100th monkey effect? What is that?
Well, I would like to believe that we come from the place of win-win. You know,
absolutely,
what Stephen Covey talks about, the there's the lose-lose consciousness that, mm-hmm, you know, we see oftentimes in the evening news, and then there's the win-lose, right? So yesterday evening I was out with at a friend's house, and we were watching the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's in a sports scenario, this is the consciousness that there's, last night on the Super Bowl, there was going to be a winner one way or the other. You know, if they went into overtime, there was going to be a winner and there was going to be a loser. To my knowledge, there's never been a tie in the Super Bowl. And you know, that for that scenario, that's fine. And yet, applying the win-lose and the lose-lose scenarios and when it comes to world consciousness, perspective is that that's not our highest path. And so that's where we move into the win-win, and that becomes the natural place, the place that we first choose to go to. And to give you an example of that, there's an exercise that I do, and you can find it on my website, teachmeteamwork.com. I call it tennis ball madness. And for those who are listening in, if you go to teachmeteamwork.com and scroll down the right-hand side of the page, and just search for this little search feature for the site, tennis ball madness, three words. And essentially, this is a game that I've led with business groups, nonprofits, college students, elementary, middle, high school students, you know, you name it. I've led it with all kinds of different groups. So the basic idea is in the middle of a room, imagine a large room that's cleared out, no chairs, nothing in it, and maybe four teams of, let's just say for the sake of the conversation, 10 groups apiece, and 10 people apiece, and 10 people are in each corner. So there's four groups, 10 people each, and they're standing in the corner, and on the ground at their feet is a hula hoop just sitting on the ground. And in the center of the room, there's another hula hoop, a fifth hula hoop. And inside this center hula hoop, there's, let's say, about 100 tennis balls. And to start this game off, Linda, I hand each of the groups a set of written directions that I've prepared ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And unbeknownst to the group, but they probably assume it, I've never asked, and I've done this exercise for years, is the exact same directions on each set of piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And the directions are very simple.
Yeah.
And what I do is I say, okay, when I say open the directions, I'd like you to open the envelope and make sure your team understands the directions quickly and clearly. That's your goal initially. So I say, open the directions. All four teams frantically open their directions. They're reading them, and it's funny. They're all usually huddled up, and and they're reading the directions, and the directions essentially say, your objective is to get all of the items from the center container in your container. And I let them know that the container, so to speak, is the hula hoop that's sitting on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
That's their objective. You win, in other words, when all of the items, all the tennis balls, are now in your hula hoop.
Mm-hmm.
And now here are the rules. You can only carry one item at a time, one tennis ball at a time. You may not throw them or roll them, okay? And once the center hula hoop is empty, you may take them from anybody else. And you may not guard your hula hoop, okay? And so here's what happens. And all of a sudden, once I get a sense of that they've at least read their directions one time, and I do this at a fast pace,
mm-hmm.
and I say, on your mark, get set, go! And like clockwork, Linda, like clockwork, people drop their directions. And they run imagine 40 people running to the center of the room, frantically grabbing tennis balls, running back, and putting them in their hula hoop. Well, quickly, the center hula hoop is empty. Now, they all start stealing from each other.
Oh, my God.
And lots of running and back and forth. And initially, they're laughing, almost always. In fact, I just did this game. Just did this game a week ago Sunday, so 8 days ago. And I was at a college doing this with actually 10 college students. Instead of four groups, we had three groups, and three people in one, three people in another, four people in another. It doesn't usually matter as long as that's a really small group to do this activity with.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the same result. People running, stealing from each other, kind of laughing initially. And then, usually when people get tired, you'll hear someone say, we're never going to win.
Mm-hmm.
This is a no-win game. And then they'll look. Someone might walk up to me while everybody's running around, and they'll say, the directions are wrong, Tom. The directions are wrong. No one will ever win. And I'll just smile. I won't say anything. And then once people get tired enough, someone usually says, time out, time out, time out,
mm-hmm.
and gets the group to stop and says, if we keep this up, we're going to be doing this all day. And we're going to be completely exhausted. So let me read the instructions. So they'll pick up the instructions and they'll scratch their head. And usually, not always, but usually, they'll realize it says nothing about moving the hula hoops.
Mm.
They stack them, put all the tennis balls in the stack, we all win.
Mm-hmm.
No more running around. Okay.
So how powerful.
So it's very powerful. I did this once with an organization that had offices around the world, about 40 people. And they had one of the struggles that they were going through, that they were experiencing, was the very same thing that they did at the beginning of the game, thinking for themselves, not as a whole, and not sharing resources, and not thinking things through and being rushed. And now I am always accused, virtually always, and what I'm accused of is, Tom, you rushed us.
Mm-hmm.
The way you paced this, you sat on your mark and said, go. You hardly gave us much time to really read the instructions, and you rushed us. And I say, well, that's very interesting. Do you ever feel rushed at work?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes. And I say, so, and what happens? We don't stop. Well, in this activity, this game, who was really in control? Me or you? Well, we were. All we had to do was say, stop. And it never said in there that there was a time factor.
Mm-hmm.
And so they realized, so then we have discussions around who's in control.
Right.
And at what point do we want to enter into a win-win situation, win-win consciousness, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And do we need to get to the place of exhaustion first, and then we're willing to think about it? Or are we willing to, in the face of feeling rushed, can someone on this team, in this group, in this organization say, time out, stop, before we go any further? Are we sure this is what we want to do?
Wow.
And that is a skill, Linda, that, you know, individually we need, right? In our day-to-day life of, wait, am I getting caught up, you know, in just like, you know, 95% of population, or whatever percentage of the population it is, that there's this movement, you know, to consume more or watch more TV or, you know, have more fear about this or that, the stock market or the war or whatever. And there's a movement, right? It's like a train.
Absolutely.
And a group of people, you know, imagine an individual who gets caught up in this, but a group of people in an organization, a team, a community who think like this, like this group, like this game points out.
Or the world. How about the planet?
Yeah, the planet. So
yeah.
So what we want to do, you know, the questions I want to raise is, you tell me, what do you, next time you encounter this situation, you feel rushed, there's apparently four teams, but in reality there's one team, or one. And at what point are we going to choose to get to the place of win-win consciousness? And so that, so your question, to take it, go back to the beginning of what is it that we want to get out of activities like this? What is it that we want to teach? What is it that we want to experience? What I want to have a group experience is, first, let's get to win-win. Let's go there first. And if we can't get there first, let's call a timeout first, you know, and say, timeout, all right, let's at least make a conscious decision. Because I've had people say, well, you know, Tom, I like winning. I like the competition.
Yeah.
And I say, that's great. Just choose consciously.
Absolutely. And so, like, it's a different perspective and choosing that out-of-the-box thinking. And actually, it's reclaiming your personal power, all the things that ability to look at the situation from a different viewpoint instead of all the conditioning and schooling and you've got to do it this way and you've got to exhaust yourself or you've got to destroy the resources and the planet. You've got to destroy everything there is and never stop. It makes you become a victim almost instead of having that stepping over into this brilliant, beautiful, magnificent power that each of us holds.
Well, and you know, the peace that I get through games, that I choose to believe that people get through games is, or exercises, is you know, we can talk about this till we're blue in the face.
Yes.
And then when people experience it, they there's an emotional component that they remember. They you know, a month, 6 months later, people will say, you know what? This is like that tennis ball game. I feel as just like I did in the tennis ball game. And they'll say, you know, I'm choosing to believe that we can get to the place of the aha sooner. And so that's the beauty, is that I think feeling it brings it to the surface longer. Now it's like anything else; it's practice.
Yeah.
You know, having one experience like that is, in the face of all the other experiences that we've had, you know, of what's in it for me, and how can I win, or my little subgroup here. You know, there was a a large electrical component company. I was speaking with someone in the HR department, human resources, and we were talking one day about she teaches team skills to new hires.
Yeah.
And so the oftentimes these new hires are engineers right out of college.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, Tom, one of my large frustrations, but really the thing that keeps me employed is this, the fact that these young engineers come out of college and they're exceptionally bright, and yet at the same time they're not very good at and not very practiced at working on the team. Well, she said our whole competitive environment, our competitive edge in the marketplace rests on the shoulders of teamwork.
Mm-hmm.
So she says, what I have to do is I work with these young men, typically, who need to be taught how to effectively work on a team. And I said, so do you ever tell the universities this? You know, like, because she says the team skills that they get and getting their engineering degree,
yeah,
is, she says, typically limited to their senior year, where at some point they're forced to work in a group of three people, mm-hmm, on some collaborative project. And it's sort of, she says, like being thrown into a pool and saying, this is how we're going to teach you how to swim.
Yeah.
They essentially say, we're going to ask you to work on this collaborative project, but they don't teach them how.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
And so then, and so she says it's kind of comical. During the interview, these engineers will say, yeah, you know, pretty much I did all the work, and one of the other guys did, and a little bit, but there was this third guy who hardly did anything.
Yeah.
And so now she's faced with teaching them how to play together, how to collaborate, share ideas in this environment, because their four years of intense learning at the university was about who's got the highest grade,
right,
not collaboration, not how to work together, not what we can create and manifest together, mm-hmm, but what I can create and manifest on my own, so I get the highest GPA.
Yeah, and it's really that lack and lack and fear mentality when you go into that competition versus collaboration. But mm-hmm, what I hear you say is that even to compete in our world, we need to collaborate.
Absolutely. You know, it's it used to be you could buy, you could stay competitive by, you know, buying the latest technology. Like, you know, remember when fax machines came out and they,
yeah,
were expensive, and
yeah,
and hardly anybody had them except the people who could afford them. And, you know, now, even if you need a fax, but, you know, you used to be able to remain competitive if you had the most powerful computer. Well, you know, $1,000 buys you an amazing computer, you know.
Yeah.
And so technology is not, can't keep you competitive anymore.
Yeah.
What's going to keep you competitive is your ability to work as a team, and not individually. You know, there's the organizations that are really going to move forward are the ones that are moving, are able to think creatively,
oh, yeah,
in the right brain arena. You know,
or
Dan
whole
Pink,
brain. Yeah.
Whole brain, yeah.
Yeah.
Dan Pink talks about in his,
yeah,
book A Whole New Mind about,
yeah,
this. So, you know, and Thomas Friedman in his book The World Is Flat, that's gotten so much press, is, you know, that a lot of jobs are moving overseas, India, China, the Philippines. You know, I just was on tech support yesterday with someone in the Philippines, and the crystal clear sound, and you know that these left brain jobs are moving overseas. So,
mm-hmm,
what we're going to need to do,
yeah,
I believe, is right brain more right brain. I mean, I think that
yes.
if the pendulum's going to swing anywhere,
yes.
it needs to swing in that direction.
Absolutely.
And then also how we do that together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's my passion, too. It's that wholeness and being able to step into that collaboration and that whole process and see what how you can pull these resources. Because my view also is not only that you need to use that right brain and that we need to collaborate, but that businesses that are very rigidly holding on to these competition mentalities, this fear and lack, and we've got to be in power and we've got to control, it's really a dinosaur, and there's nothing they can do except in their rigidity except break. And it's the entrepreneurs and the creational beings, which we all are, we have infinite creational power, that is going to be the segment of our population that can bring this out and stimulate our economy and our governments and power, the real power from the heart and from our souls and spirits. It goes back to the spirituality aspect.
It does. So when we present this information to a business, this is what I alluded to, at the top of the hour, that I view this as a very spiritual work.
Yes,
and totally. And yet the average business may not. Mm-hmm. They might look at it in terms of what's the bottom line.
Bottom line, absolutely.
And yet, I'm choosing to believe with more that there's an opening with looking at the spirituality in our work in business. I think that what used to be talked about but never printed on a website or company literature, I think I'm choosing to believe that that's going to change, that we're going to see more spiritual language and a greater spiritual understanding.
Yes, I know that's absolutely one of my beliefs as well. And you know what? I have about 20 minutes until 10.
Okay.
And I wondered if I could just invite people. There are a couple of people on the call, and just invite people, if you're still up for it, Tom, for allowing us to experience the power of one of your games, even virtually. You can do that.
Yes.
So are there any takers? Because it's really powerful to be able to use this in one of your groups. So I'm not, I can't do it all alone, Tom, right?
Well, we can do one,
okay.
For example, that I can describe, and whether whoever's listening, even to the recording, can do this. And here's an exercise that a friend I met at many of the people listening to this recording or listening to this live here are familiar with a guy named Tony Robbins, Anthony Robbins.
Oh, yeah.
For several years now, he's offered a program for teenagers that's kind of a program. Many people, if they've gone to a program, are very familiar with his adult programs, but this is a program run by his foundation and called Discovery Camp, and mm-hmm. I had the pleasure of presenting at it for 2 years. And I met a woman there who grew up in South Africa during this is a white woman, Caucasian, who grew up in South Africa during apartheid, mm-hmm. and was kind of oblivious to it. It's kind of one of these things where it was just how everybody, operated, and
yeah.
didn't think too much about it until she got older, and then she was at a formative age when all of that came crashing down. And so now she goes to school groups and talks about her awareness and how she grew up, sort of this some of the things she wasn't even paying attention to that she wished she had, kind of in retrospect,
yeah.
that it was right there, but she didn't notice it.
Absolutely.
She just wasn't conscious. So what she talks about is perspective a lot in this presentation. So she and I were talking one time, and she'll talk with 500, 600, 800 students at a time in a whole school. And she wants them to get this idea of perspective, the power of perspective, and how important it is when we begin to look at something. And our perspective will change the way we learn.
Absolutely.
And so she said, Tom, is there an exercise, an activity that you can think of that I, you know, when all these students are sitting on their chairs or sitting on the floor and I'm standing up and talking to them that they can do without, you know, all getting up because there just isn't room and there just isn't time. And I said, well, absolutely. There's this great activity. I call it ceiling clock. So if you, again, go to my website, teachmeteamwork.com, and search for ceiling clock on the right-hand side, two words, ceiling clock, you'll find a video clip of this and written up directions. But in essence, imagine, so this is for everyone who's listening, you can do this, and I'm going to ask you to hold your phone with your left hand, and with your right hand, I'd like you to take your index finger and raise your arm and point it at the sky, at your ceiling, if you will. And so I'm going to imagine that your arm is extended above your head and your first finger is pointing at the ceiling. And I'd like you to pretend that there's an analog clock, an old-style clock, pasted to the roof of your ceiling, and a second hand is going around and around in a clockwise fashion. And what I want you to do throughout this exercise is to keep your finger always pointed, your fingertip always pointed at the ceiling, always pointed at the clock. And I want you to make your finger, Linda, travel around, kind of trace the second hand. So start moving your finger, your arm, your hand, in the, you know, this movement of the second hand in a clockwise direction. Now, while it's moving, I'd like you to slowly lower your hand with your finger always pointing at the ceiling and lower your hand to about chest level, Linda. Okay, now, tell me which direction your finger, and your finger hasn't stopped moving. It's still following the second hand. Which direction is your finger moving?
It's moving toward the left and then right to the right.
It's moving in a counterclockwise direction?
Yes.
All right. Something has happened.
Now tell me about that.
Now, just for fun, let's do that again.
Okay.
Now, if you're listening to this, Linda's reaction is very typical. Okay.
That's too funny.
So again, we're going to hold your hand above your above your head, your fingers pointing at the ceiling, and I actually do this to make sure everybody's got it. And you're tracing the second hand, moving your arm, slowly lowering your fingers, always pointed, your fingertips always pointed at the ceiling, and you lower it to your chest. Magically, your finger is moving in a counterclockwise direction. Now, let me ask you, Linda, what changed? Your
That's
finger,
your
perspective, your finger always moved in the same direction. What changed was your perspective. Okay? And isn't that a powerful thing?
It is very powerful.
And so she goes on, this woman in South Africa now, goes on to say, perspective, perspective. Let me share with you my perspective then and my perspective now. See, what happened, apartheid never changed.
Right.
The oppression was always there. What changed was her perspective.
Right.
And that was everything.
Absolutely.
It was like a rebirth for her.
That's really powerful. And I sat in coaching school. I, too, am a life coach. And I sit and I understand it. at these levels that are head levels, and they say, well, perspective more than circumstance determine your reality. And yes, I believe that. But that exercise was so powerful at making it come from my head down into my heart.
Yeah, and you know this, if you do this, I've done this with a large group, several hundred people, and always when you do this, you hear people laughing, you have people looking at you going, huh? How did that just happen?
Mm-hmm.
And you also, what you also have are, you know, people trying it again and again and trying to reproduce what just happened.
That's amazing and powerful. And I have a lot of questions about where you come up with these, and I want to talk about your team. Teach me teamwork and how you built your website or 31,000 members and all that. And we have just a few more minutes. So I wanted to invite people again, if you have questions, really quickly, to ask your questions. And if not, I have bunches more questions.
I'm happy to answer any and all.
And I wanted to make sure we have time to talk about Generation Y, because that, too, is a really powerful piece for what I'm doing and for what the world is doing.
Yes.
People are incredible, and to me, I have a bias about those, too, because I have three of those people living in my house. So I just open this for your questions. Does anyone have a question for Tom right now? And Tom, too, my experience with this has been that there are lots and lots of people who sign up and they don't have the ability to come right at the time for live, but they are listening. So I'm very happy that we're just at least doing some of these games. They're fun.
Yes.
All right. Well, how do you do that? Where do you come up with these games?
Well, I have been intrigued with this type of learning for a long time. I was first exposed to it at a deep level when, right out of college, I became a juvenile corrections officer, is really what my official title was. And what I did was I worked with in a wilderness therapeutic program for those people who might be listening who might have heard of a program called Outward Bound. I didn't work for Outward Bound, but it was a program modeled after Outward Bound. The only people we worked with were kids who were in the custody of the state, had been in prison, and had chosen to go through this pre-release wilderness, 6-week-long wilderness therapeutic program, and lots of backpacking and kind of rock climbing, and then also lots of experiential learning and team building, team building games, and I just loved it. That's where so I wanted to learn more, just studying activities and talking to people. So that's where I started, and then over the years there's organizations that if you go to a conference, you'll see workshops on these very same games. And there's an organization called the Association for Experiential Education, and you could find them at aee.com, I believe, or is it .org? AEE is – but if you Google Association for Experiential Education, you'll find it. It is AEE.org. So always I'm interested, and I have lots of friends now who there's books written on these. My e-book is, you know, some of these. So like a lot of people, when you love something, you tend to attract other people who are into that thing. So that's...
Yeah, well, and I've spent the most of the day, actually, I have to confess. I read your games are just amazing. They're small. They're mobile. They are economical. They're shoestrings. They're literally games that you play on a shoestring. So you have 8 games that are just magnificent games in your free downloadable ebook. And I watched your games all day, and I was so sad when the videos ended. I thought, oh, it's so fun. I don't want them to end.
Well, this is the thing is that in 2001 on 9/11.
I was
driving that morning to go and deliver a part of one of a three-person team to lead a four-day train the trainer event, and about 8 hours from my home. And I had left that morning I was driving, because it was one of those trips where driving was actually ended up being faster than flying there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was about 30 minutes into the drive, I decided to turn on the radio and heard the first tower coming down. That was the first time I'd even realized what was going on. Stopped, pulled over, made calls. We decided to go ahead with the training, because half of the people, 30 people, were already at the event because they had signed up for a pre-event on training on September 10th.
Right.
The other people were trapped at airports and whatnot. So we decided mm-hmm. to go ahead and work with these 30 people. It's incredibly powerful. And on the drive there and on the drive back, I at the event, I thought, oh, this is amazing. This, you know, if there was ever a time, Linda, where we need to promote win-win mm-hmm. consciousness, connection, it's yes. now, and on a world level. And I
Absolutely.
Thought, how am I going to do that?
Absolutely.
So that's where the inspiration for Teach Me Teamwork came. And so now...
How did you know that was my next question?
Well, you know, now we're... It's funny, you know, I launched in 2002, December 2002. I started shooting video and knew not very much about all of this and teaching through the web. And so now I'm delighted to be able to say I've got subscribers from around the world, 31,000 plus subscribers and 103 countries that I know of. And so people access my site to learn these things. And, you know, I lead teleclasses and teach these skills to people around the world. And I'm most passionate now about this, my latest project, which is the Emerging Leaders Coaching Program, emergingleaderscoachingprogram.com. There's a link off of teachmeteamwork.com. And with all of these people coming to Teach Me Teamwork and doing what you did, looking at the games and this type of thing, one of the things that is true, and you know this, is that regardless of the game, what really matters is who is leading it and the level of consciousness they have when they teach, when they lead it. Because you can have the coolest, niftiest, newest team-building game, and if it's led by someone who approaches their life from mm-hmm. fear, what they're going to teach is fear.
Absolutely.
And so what I'm doing through this Emerging Leaders Coaching Program is actually, it's focused on working with Generation Y, which is, you know, essentially 20-somethings, and specifically people who work in nonprofits and youth-serving agencies. So my goal is to work with this group through this program for a year. It's a year-long, enroll at any time, and I provide one-on-one coaching, ongoing training each month, mastermind group calls, a web-based a resource where people can log in and download all kinds of resources. I have an online community, and then a live 3-day ultimate leadership summit where all of the participants come once a year and participate in a live event, a live training event. So it's this. The whole idea of this program is long-term, you know, a year of intense support and training so that we are able to create leaders who are going forth from a really solid place and a place of win-win and higher consciousness.
And it sounds like that the program is also based on that integrity and walking your talk and living your values, not just teaching something and living something else.
Yes, the transparency, you know, that I think all great leaders and have, and Boy, you know, if there was, again, ever a time that we need leaders with integrity and transparency and who have a really strong, what I call personal foundation, and are clear in who they are, what they stand for, their values, their boundaries, and are able to move from that, it's sort of like your operating system.
Absolutely.
And when a leader has a strong operating system, go ahead and put whatever program you want in there, and it's going to run smoother. So that's what I'm doing there. And so this is it's you know my goal is in the next 10 years is to be able to support the work of 5,000 people in these in nonprofits and youth serving agencies.
That's amazing. So is that. Will that be just working with them, with the nonprofits, and offering this service for free, or how does that work?
Actually, the participant, actually the organizations pay a small fee to be able to enroll their Gen Y, their 20-something, you know, emerging leaders in this program. And what's awesome is that. This is a generation that has grown up, you know, with understanding coaching and wanting to be more. You know, this is these are. You said you have three Gen Ys in your home, and it's not just you that has told them. You know, you can, you know, change the world. You can really do something, and so that's the support that I'm providing with this, and real concrete. You know, methodologies. I've got a whole curriculum mapped out to get there.
Right. So this is the program itself. Is you're working with the leaders who are teaching the Generation Y.
Well, it's Generation Y, actually, who are these leaders, these 20-somethings that are now flooding the workforce. You know, it used to be the largest generation was the baby boomers.
Mm-hmm. Now it is Gen Y.
Now it's Gen Y because this large generation, the baby boomers, largest generation ever, well, they all had kids and lots of them. And so this is as Gen Y moves into the workforce, which they are doing, you know, in greater numbers every year, this is a program to support them as they move forward.
And it's incredible. I was looking at it today at the program, and well, for several weeks now, actually. And when I look at it, I just become so inspired because these children, youth, I should not call them children.
Young leaders.
Mine, they're my children. But they're amazing. Amazing potential in action. They have pure possibility.
Yes.
Pure creational power. Their voices are emerging as the big and the new, the newest of the new. They're the heart based. They're coming from the heart. They're used to working in groups. They're used to having the technology that they need. So they know that they can no longer just rely on that technology. They know that whatever comes from their heart and their authentic expression is going to be out there across the universe within seconds. And so they're just an amazing potential walking as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
So your program is very necessary and amazing, and I'm just inspired every time I read it. So thank you.
Well, it's that what you read on that page was, if you want to talk about inspiration, I wrote most of that in a 24-hour period.
Wow.
In mid-October just last year.
Well, it once you see the benefit and once you see the power of game, of play, of fun, we are taught that we have to do something entirely different and that we have to live in struggle and live in all these places of pain and suffering. And so when somebody comes out there and says, oh, well, there's this possibility with game and the power. These games cross cultural boundaries. They cross religious boundaries. They touch the very essence of who you are. So it's a very powerful model.
Well, it is, and you know, you mentioned cross cultural for our listeners. If you would like to see some really neat, there's a example on my site where a gentleman from Australia contacted me who was going to India to help an orphanage, and he sent back video footage to me of a game that I had taught him that he and then in turn taught to these orphans. Mm-hmm. And it was a game that I call Infinite Loops, and meant to get people to think of an alternative solution, mm-hmm. and so which is, you know, it's described in the ebook that I give away, the team building games on a shoestring.
And they're really fun, powerful games. And I invite everybody who listens to look at these. And they're not only games that are fun, they're games that teach you all the skills that anybody would ever want to know about leadership, not only for Gen Y or for adults. It's for the whole, from kids all the way through whatever age. And they're beautiful, wonderful. So I invite you to take a look at www.teamwork.com.
Teach me teamwork.com.
Yes. Sorry. TEACHMEAMWORK.com. And just to take a look at the wealth of resources there for free. It's amazing. I'm impressed. So I thank you again. And I'm looking at the time here. I have about 2 minutes past 10. So wondered if there's a closing thought, an important point that you would like to leave us with.
Well, let's see. I'm going to move from inspiration here. When it comes to why we stand up and we work with a team and we look at team building, I think the place that this last message that I'd like to get across is for people to explore and look at the real possibility every time that what we're doing is that really raising consciousness. And as we do this together, you know, as all of us who are involved in teams and team building and teaching team skills, if we think of it in terms of, I am raising the consciousness of this team, and not just making them work better together, but it's a consciousness raising effort, or not necessarily effort, but experience, and to share this knowledge. So because there is I do think that there is a sense of urgency about this work, which is why I'm making all of this information up my website for free. Is now is the time. Now is the time for us to get out and teach. So, and I believe that this is teaching experientially is the fastest way people are going to get it at the heart level. So get out there and teach. Even if you've got no experience teaching experientially, trust in the process.
Absolutely. And go to look at this at the Emerging Leaders Coaching Program, because it's something that is a powerful program that has infinite possibility, which all of your work does, Tom. It's about possibility, not the problems. Looking at the opportunity and taking the flip side of all the problems and looking at it in this amazing context, not fear but love, and not lack but abundance. And I see as a larger picture for that, and I love to hear you say, now is the time, because that is my mantra. Now is the time. There is an extreme sense of urgency about this, because when we look at things from love instead of fear, we see all that possibility. We have a new perspective, and what that means for me is that we can find peace, and we can create peace. We can create a whole new planet, and what you're doing is just really powerful and healing as far as I'm concerned. So I applaud you. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight.